you would, and turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6. And I thought a lot about what to share. Actually, I'm prepared to start the book of Daniel in our Wednesday night study, but I thought I'd wait till the other half of the church got well and would be here for it. So, but I have something I want to share, and that's something that the Lord has dealt my heart with just recently, and I found that usually when God is dealing with me about something, He's dealing with others about it as well. Let me say that contentment is the mark of a mature Christian. Contentment is a mark of a mature Christian. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul is addressing Timothy, and in verse 6 he says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we carry nothing out, or that we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therefore be therewith content." Now, I want you to notice that word content. In verse 6, he speaks of contentment. It's great gain, godliness with contentment. And then he says in verse 8 that we should be content, the fact that we have food and that we have clothing. That's what he says. He's promised that to us. Jesus said that the birds have nests and the foxes have holes, but the Son of Man had no place to lay his head. And I believe that we have really gotten spoiled in this country. And it's not a thing about contentment versus ambition. I want to address that in just a bit. But he says in verse 9, "But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money," not money, but the love of money, "is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. There have been people who have sold their soul for an extra 15 cents that brought them nothing but heartache." Then he addresses the man of God. And I take this very personal. "But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith, laid hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses." Now, in this passage, the Apostle Paul is dealing with Timothy, and he says godliness with contentment is great gain. He says that if you have food and if you have raiment, you should therewith be content. Now, we hear these words, but I don't think that we accept them. Well, this is ridiculous. We should have a place to put our head. We should have a home. You know, the early church, they didn't have a building. And so he's dealing with the importance. And then he gives warning about the rich in verse 9 that fall into temptation. They fall into the snare. Any deal that's too good to be true normally is too good to be true. And they fall into a snare and many foolish and hurtful lust. And it says, which drown man in destruction and perdition. And then he goes on to speak about the love of money. It's the root of all evil. And while there are those who've coveted after it, they have erred from the faith. They've turned from proper doctrine. They've pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Then he tells the man of God, he says, to do three things. We are to flee these things. We are to follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. And we are to fight the good fight of faith. So he says to flee, follow, and fight. Now, it's difficult to enjoy life if you're always wishing that you had a different one. You know, if you learn to enjoy what you have, it really doesn't matter what else is available. And it seems like many Christians suffer from one of three attitudes: the attitude of enduring life, the attitude of trying to escape life, or the attitude of enjoying life. There's questions. We wonder why so many Christians just endure life. Why are there those who want to escape their life, and why are there those who simply just enjoy life? In 1 Timothy 6, down in verse 17, he says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches. You know, a person's riches, you think of the life of Job. His riches were gone just like that. He lost his finance. He lost his family. He lost, his friends. He lost his fitness. All just one right after the other. And what is your life? It's here today. It's a vapor. It's gone forever. And so he tells us to not be high-minded or to trust in these uncertain riches, but in the living God. Now, the rich man in Luke chapter 16, he lifted up his eyes in torments from the flames of hell. He didn't go to hell because he was rich. He went to hell because he trusted in his riches instead of trusting in the Lord. And he speaks of the Lord in verse 17, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. In Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 10, Nehemiah speaks and says, then he said unto them, go your way, eat the fat and drink the sweet, and send portions unto them which nothing is prepared. For this day is holy unto the Lord, neither be ye sorry, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. And then in Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, he says to the church of Philippi, not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Now, when we think about the state, we're not talking about Tennessee, and we're not talking about, Arkansas. What our condition, our immediate condition is, Paul says that he has respect of want. He's learned whatever state to be content. He says, I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Either where and in all things I'm instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. And then he says, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. So I want to speak about the importance of contentment. Now, this is not what I was going to deliver tonight, but I felt like I should hold off on Daniel. But I think that you'll learn some things here. Just three short things I want you to understand about contentment. First of all, learn to be content with what you have. Are you content with what you have? Years ago, many, many years ago, long time ago, there was a young businessman, and he and I were befriending one another, and he had made mention to another mutual friend, I like Brother Savage, but he has no ambition. And that cut me to the bone, It cut me, and I went to him, and I said, I want you to know that, you said this, and it was upsetting to me, and I don't think I'm lazy, and I don't think it's not an issue of ambition, but I have given my expectations to the Lord. Now, I don't think that we can sit down and pray and just wait for God to drop it in our lap, but we need to be careful that our own ambitions don't get in the way of what God has for us. And by the way, I'm in church tonight and he's not. But there's this concept that I'm a mover and shaker. I'm a self-made man. I pulled myself by my own bootstraps, and I'm this ambitious person. And I want you to know we need to wait on the Lord and be content with what we have. I have learned that when you are faithful to God and faithful with what God has given you, he gives you more. And I'm not just talking about material things. So learn to be content. In Hebrews 13, verse 5, the writer of Hebrews says, let your conversation be without covetousness. What is covetousness? Let me give you a simple definition. It's the itch for more. This always tickles Brother Vaskar. And it's funny that it's come up tonight, but he worked on planes, he worked on jets, and he did all this kind of stuff. And he wants to talk about it, but I don't care. But he wants to talk about it. And he thinks it's funny that I always say, you got a B-52, but somebody gets a B-53 and you're no longer content. He says, Pastor, there is no B-53s. I know that. I realize that. But you know how it is. Somebody gets a new computer, and then your computer is too slow. I have a computer in my office. I'm still pulling Lotus off of it. You know, I love the program Lotus. Anybody know what Lotus is? Do you remember that? What was wrong with that? It was fine. I still got messages on that I'm pulling off. And I think it's I have Windows 94 on it. All the Bible programs work on it well. That's fine. Now, I've got a newer computer, and I have the latest Word. And you don't buy the floppy disk, or you don't floppy disk. You don't buy the CD anymore. You pay annually for Word now. And they just charge your credit card and send you email to you. They charge you. But all of a sudden, that itch for more, that person, I talked to a pastor friend. He says, I'm out looking at cars. What do you think about this Honda? And we're talking. And I said, I'm not in the market for a car. I said, our car's paid off. I'm trying to get our house paid off. And when I get our house paid off, I want to pay cash for the next car. He's a good friend of mine. He's older than I am, as most of my friends are. And I always tell him when he buys something, probably the last car you ever buy. You know, he said, I wish he wouldn't say that. I said, well, it is. He said, I know that it is, but I wish he wouldn't say that. You see, it's different, it's difficult because your lifestyle is not without covetousness. It's that green monster, that little monster of envy. Someone gets something, and it might be just something that you're in, you know, that's your niche. It may, with some fellows, it's hunting guns. With other guys, it's knives. With ladies, it's maybe sewing machines. With most women, it's the mall and money and things like that. But covetousness is a grievous sin. It's a horrible, you know, it's mentioned with drunkenness and adultery. It's right there in the list with these terrible sins. And it's among one of the most worst sins mentioned in the Bible. We think of Achan, who he saw the wedge of gold. He saw the 20 or the 200 shekels of silver. He saw the Babylonian garments. He saw them. He wanted them. He desired them. He lusted for them. He took them. And the Bible says he took the accursed thing in Joshua chapter 7, verse 15. And it shall be that he that is taken with the accursed thing shall be burned with fire, and he and all that he hath, because he hath transgressed the covenant of the Lord, and because he hath wrought folly on Israel. Remember, it was Achan who because of his sin, 36 men died at Ai. God's presence left them. Remember, because of Achan's sin, 36 women became widows. Remember, because of Achan's sin of covetousness, there's an innumerable amount of children who became fatherless because of one man's sin. And they took Achan out, and they took Mrs. Achan out, and they took all the little Achans out, and they stoned them with stones, and they burned them with fire. I think we should see the importance that God puts the emphasis on covetousness. Covetousness never causes you to be happy. Covetousness brings great misery, and satisfaction never comes until the greed of covetousness is crushed in our life. Achan's the one that God's people who coveted and paid dearly for it. Learn to be content with what you have. Now, it may not be much. I'll see a car and say, don't laugh at the bumper sticker on it. Don't laugh at it. It's paid for. You know, and I think he's got a good attitude on that, you know. But this concept that someone gets something, now I have this, what do they used to call that, keeping up with the Joneses? That's got to be put down. And Hebrews says, and be content with such things as you have, or as you have. Now, what do you have that when you got it, you were just joyful about it? When you got it, you were just thankful for it. When you got it, you couldn't believe that you received it. But now, it doesn't seem to, it's lost its luster. Can I tell you, it hasn't changed. You've changed. And you should be content. Mark chapter 7, notice in verse 21 and 22, for from within, out of the heart of man, proceedeth evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thieves, covetousness, there's the list, wickedness, deceitful, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. This sin is grouped with some of the worst. And in Ezekiel chapter 33, verse 31, the latter part of the verse, he says, but their heart goeth after their covetousness. When we think of covetousness, my mind goes to King Ahab. King Ahab, he was the king. He had everything, but there was a little parcel of ground that was next to his vineyard that he wanted so badly to expand his vineyard. And it was Naboth's vineyard, remember? And it was given to Naboth. It was handed down in his family. And because of his family and the sentimental value of it, he refused to let it go. And so Ahab came to him. He gave a good business deal. He said, I'll give you this part of a vineyard. It's much nicer than what you got, and it was. It's larger than what you have, and it was. But it wasn't the thing about producing or having greater or better. It was the sentimental. I have some things that are sentimental to me. They're not worth a whole lot, but it belonged to my father, or it belonged to some church member that gave me that thing. Back in my office, I have Brother Buddy Manley's Bible he left to me, and I have it in a box, and I pull it out every blue moon and look through it, and I see some notes that he's put in there, and miss him greatly. It's not of any value. If I put it on Amazon, I don't think it would get a quarter, but to me it's very valuable. And this is where Naboth was. And yet we find that Ahab, his wicked wife, what's her name? Who is it? Jezebel, that's right. She said, why are you so sad? He was laying on his bed with his back to the world, facing the wall, pouting. Deplorable disposition of a king. Why are you so sad? I want Naboth's vineyard. She said, I'll get it. And had him murdered. Listen, he begged, he borrowed, he tried to steal, and then he murdered. And you cannot blame this sin on the devil. It comes from within. Covetousness is from within. Covetousness will always steal the joy of contentment. Now, learn to be content with what you have, but learn not to make comparisons. Be wise. The Bible says it's not wise to make comparisons. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, ladies, it says, and when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eye and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Eve compared what the serpent had promised to what she already had. And what does she already have? She lived in paradise with the perfect man. There's never been a perfect man since that time. You know, someone says, I think I found Mr. Perfect. No, you haven't. Not by any chance. Christians get into trouble when they begin to compare what they have instead of what they desire to possess. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I have this ambition one day to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. I don't see that anywhere in the Bible, and it's probably not God's will, and it's probably going to destroy your life if that happens. Many years ago, Reader's Digest published about 10 people who became millionaires overnight through different ways. And as I read those short stories about their lives, they talked about friends, lifelong friends that they lost. They talked about family they wouldn't speak to them anymore. They talked about friends they never had before and relatives they never heard of before that came. They came and they said most of them said, I was happier before I won the millions, but I can't let it go. You see, when Eve started looking around and she started listening to the wrong influence, and she became discontent with paradise. And she saw, she took, and then she ate of the forbidden fruit. And this is what destroyed this. This is where keeping up with the Joneses destroys. When you compare your house with the neighbor's house, when you compare your car with your brother's car, when you compare your clothes to the co-worker's clothes, when you compare the toys that your children have to your friend's toys, when you compare what your paycheck is, and you've been there 3 years longer, and this person's making $20 more a week, when you compare your lifestyle to your neighbor's lifestyle, listen, the outcome is always you feel as if you have come up short and disappointed. Be content. Be content with what you have and learn not to make comparisons. When you make comparisons with what other people have, often It's in the church as well. You know, I don't know who drives what. I don't care. I know what Dean drives because I drive it part of the time sometimes when we go to Memphis. I don't know why he didn't want to get in my little Toyota, but we go in that big truck and it's nice. I was driving that, and I was we went to Memphis not long ago, and I was driving his truck, and I thought, man, this is nice. I could get used to this. And but you know what? We need to be content with what we have. When this happens, we start comparing, and this is not good for our health, for our family, for our marriage, for our church, in any situation. Lastly, let me say that we should learn to appreciate the smallest blessings of God. Just learn to appreciate the smallest blessings of God. I know when we were first married, and I was in Bible college, and we couldn't afford very much. And Debbie was always so good. You know, if she ever asked for anything, if I say, can I get you something, what would you like to have? She would never ask of anything that was beyond my reach. Ever. One time I remember, I'll never forget it. Man, I mean, we were poor. And we were trying to pay the school bill, trying to pay JEA. And I said, I got a little bit of extra money. Is there anything I can pick up for you? And she said, boy, you know, I'd love to have. And I thought, Hail Mary for grace, I hope I got enough money. What is it, honey? And she said, I sure would like an apple. And I said, I'll get you that apple. And I went home, and she said, oh, honey, this is the best apple I think I've ever had. Now, she's gotten a little bit better things. She's gotten carrots since that time, you know, and some other things. She's a very practical woman. I think she'd rather have a new washer and dryer than a new diamond, to be honest with you. I had a friend. He was terrible at this kind of stuff, and he got his wife a new vacuum cleaner for her birthday, and she about beat him to death with it. But Debbie would say, marvelous. I love a new vacuum. You know, that would be Debbie. But learn to appreciate the smallest blessings of God. If you think that you can throw your nose up and be disgruntled and discontent and ungrateful for what God has provided for you, and you think that spirit and attitude is going to make God pour more on you, you're sadly mistaken. John chapter 1, verse 27 says, He it is who coming after me is preferred before me, whose shoe latches I am not worthy to unloose. John the Baptist considered it above him to unlatch the sandals of Jesus. What a beautiful attitude of a spirit of service. What is it that God asked of us that we're too good for that? That's beneath us. What is it? What would that be? I read a story about the great preacher R.A. Torrey. I read him often, and I know many of you do too. But he came in from preaching a missions conference, and he was in a real hurry. He had to make some preparations and turn right around and go right back out. As he had been gone for a week, all of his clothes were dirty. He turned to a young man, and he asked him, he said, would you mind, could I please implore you to do my wash, do my laundry? I have got so much to prepare for this next meeting, and I've got to leave, and I just haven't time. And the young man looked at him, and with a tone that was unchristian, said, what do you think I am? Your errand boy. Another young man heard that reply and writ to him and said, Brother Toy, please, may I do your laundry? And he thanked him for doing it. The young man stood there and took the laundry, and he didn't think this was too menial of a task for him. And his name was James M. Gray. Not our James Gray. But his name was James M. Gray, who would one day become the president of Moody Bible Institute. And the other young man's name is forgotten and not remembered. You know, I have to be, I'm not trying to be pious or overly humble. But when God called me to preach, I didn't accept it right away. I didn't think I could do this, and I can't. He does it. He does all of it. But when I could just do anything for the Lord, I was so excited that God would give me that opportunity. I remember when I was in Jacksonville, Florida, Dr. Carol Joy had Dr. Alexander Marks come to his church, and if you met Dr. Marks, he'd say, I'm a blind Jew with a English accent and a German Shepherd dog. And he was a brilliant man. And because my father was blind, Dr. Joy said, Rick, would you come in on the weekend and would you be just a help to Dr. Marks? And he said, I know your dad was blind. I think you're comfortable with blind people. And there's a certain way that you lead blind people. And I learned a lot from growing up with my father that way. And I got to tell you, listen to me. Dr. Alexander Marks was in the front seat of my car. We had meals together. I had unlimited time with him. What a blessing he was. What a blessing he was to me. He's long time with the Lord now, but I love him and I miss him. He was a scholar. We went one time. I took him to the radio broadcast, the radio station to drop off the radio broadcast. And he was with us in our church. And he says, sir, I'm glad Jackie's not here. She would have get upset with my English accent. Sir, do you know the Lord Jesus Christ? And he says, well, I'm Catholic. I remember Dr. Mark saying, you were born a Catholic, but Jesus said you must be born again. And he began witnessing to this young man. This young man was very unruly, very rebellious. And the young man said, well, show with me where you have to go to church. And Dr. Marsh says, not only can I show you where you need to go to church, I can show you where they went every day in the early church. And he was just wonderful. We'd be riding. He said, brother, could you take me to that Shoney's place? I love those blueberry muffins. And get me a spot of tea, just a spot of tea at 3 o'clock, brother. And I said, well, Dr. Marks, I'm sorry, but they don't serve those blueberry muffins in the afternoon. That's just breakfast. I remember saying, oh, brother, it was just terrible. I got to spend time with Dr. Marks. He had Gretchen, who was his CNI dog, and she actually gave her life. His headquarters and home's in New York City, and she broke away from him and came back and jumped on him and pushed him out of the way. Rick, do you remember Dr. Alexander Marks? And pushed him out of the way, and she was hit by the car and died. And he got a new dog called Elsa. Oh, boy. Elsa was young. He came back with Elsa. He said, brother, he said, oh, Elsa, she's a fine animal. She's fine. Would you like to see her run? And I said, yes, yes, would you? You know, Elsa, Elsa. And then Elsa would start running. Is she running, brother? Oh, yes, she's running, Dr. Marks. Can't she run? I said, boy, she sure can. I went back to Bible college. And in our college, you didn't have to be paid up until finals. And if you didn't have your bill paid, they would not let you take your finals and you lose the whole semester. And they had to do that. It's a good thing that they do, because what happens, the debt gets so great you can't pay it. And I was short about 200 and, you know, I don't know, 200 and something dollars. And I was working two jobs. I was carrying 21 hours. We had a baby and a baby on the way. Life was very hard. Every day we just, my friends were back in the 70s. You ask your friends, what are you doing? Man, I'm just trying to find myself. I'm trying to find myself, man. I was just trying to find the rent and the mortgage, or the rent and the utility bills back then. And I told Debbie, I said, if God doesn't do something, I don't see how I'm going to pay this bill, and I'll lose the whole semester. And we prayed about it, and I went to the brass god in Bible college. That's a little brass door with a little combination that you open, and they put your mail in there. And I opened that up, and there's a card from Dr. Alexander Marks. And I opened the card, and it is a check from the National Jewish Something Board that he's the president of. And it was such a nice card. And he said, thank you for your devoted time with me. I so enjoyed your fellowship. Please take this gift as from the Lord and use it as God would leave you. And it paid my school bill. And I had enough to take Debbie and my two bus workers out to a nice Mexican restaurant for dinner that night. You know what? You cannot. The smallest things God honors. But, you know, some people, you know, they don't want to be an Indian. If they can't be chief, they're not going to play. You know, if they can't play first base, they're going to take their ball and bat and go home. If they can't pitch, they're going to go home. It's their basketball, and it's going to go their way, or it's not going to go at all. And I just want to tell you, if you want to have a happy Christian life, learn to be content with what you have. Learn not to make comparisons with others, and learn to appreciate the smallest blessings. Luke 16, verse 10 says, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust in much." Jesus teaches us that in order to be faithful in much, we have to be faithful in the little things. I often tell staff, and I told my Sunday school not long ago, you know, we need to dot the I's and we need to cross the T's. This is the work of God, and it's important. Be content. But godliness with contentment is great gain. And God's people said, stand with me. Father, I ask that you help us now. And Lord, while we're not many tonight, and while we miss so many that aren't here and that would love to be here, maybe there in their living room as they're watching this on their phone or their computer or on their widescreen, or maybe here in our auditorium, there are some folks who are struggling with contentment. They wonder why they always are second fiddle. They wonder why they can't always share the great testimonies that others share. And Lord, if you've spoken to their hearts, help us to come tonight and rejoice in the Lord that we have food and raiment, and we have much more than that. For you have far blessed us. Lord, help us not to make comparisons. And Lord, let us be grateful for the slightest, smallest blessings, because they lead to greater things in the kingdom of heaven. In thy name I pray. As God speaks to your heart tonight,